Welcome to Mid-Century Modernism with Monique, your go-to podcast for all things architecture, design, and innovation within mid-century modernism. Join me on a journey through the golden age of design, where every episode brings you fresh inspiration for modern living and unlocks the secrets of this iconic and timeless style. What are we waiting for? Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mid-Century Modernism with Monique. I'm Monique Anton, your host, and today I have a very special lady with me in the studio, Miss Joanne Koch. Thank you so much for being here, Joanne.
Hey, hi. Thank you for having me.
Oh, so we have been, before we press record, we have just been talking about this amazing architecture and Joanne's work. And I have studied your work and I've watched what you've done with organic architecture. And I have to tell you, I think you have one of the most soulful approaches to this style of architecture. And I wanted to talk with you about your take on, you know, this organic architecture, this original look, and how you do that so well.
Yeah. Well, I feel honored to get to work on some of these, what I think are just incredible gems that were built in the post-war era when there was so much hope and inspiration in America. And there was so much vision for how to build mass housing. And there were, America benefited from a lot of European architects that came and brought that vision to the U.S. A lot of that came through L.A. and also came up into the Bay Area. And so I feel like I feel very much a part of that inspiration and a part of that vision that was so vibrant during that era. And I think that I myself live in a home that was built in 1952 by an architect by the name of Roger Lee.
Yes.
And
huge fan of Roger Lee.
Yeah. So it was one of those things where I kind of, in doing it for myself, really kind of then figured out how to do that for my clients as well.
Right. You sort of took that inspiration and how you were living in the home and realized how other people are going to experience these spaces. I think when you started your architecture firm, did you really have that? That seems like all of your work, and you do many different types of architecture. Yeah. But for me, I was so inspired by your work specifically with mid-century modern homes that I thought, she's got a certain knowledge, and perhaps from living in them, perhaps from working on so many of them with your architecture firm, but you really get it. And you get the spirit of them, which I love. We were talking a little bit about the buzzword rustic modern that everyone is using around here. In Portola Valley and Woodside, where I'm living on the peninsula, everyone talks about rustic modern. And you defined it so well. I always think of it as, okay, it's all wood. It's cabin-like, or, you know, all original and very warm and, you know, woody. But you had a great definition of that when you were talking about, you know, how this original look can... We shouldn't even call it rustic modern. We should call it something else.
Yeah. And I think we are all kind of, we all are kind of searching to articulate and define something, and there's always variation within that. So I think it's good to be expansive with language and then try to, we all work to kind of define how to say that. But I think there is a love of the natural materials and the way in which you know, you kind of get both, right? Always when you have the natural wood ceilings like you do here in your house, right? Mm-hmm. And then you contrast mm-hmm. that against the sheetrock, they both look good together. So I think there's also this way of curating. But I was thinking about when we were talking about the definition, and I think that what I see in the homes of this era is there is really a precision of the detailing and the craftsmanship that it takes and that it took in that era to not cover things up with trim, but where the bones, where the rough is the finish, right?
Yes.
The post and beam construction. You have to do finish work in the rough. And so I think that's kind of what I was talking about is rustic. Sometimes you think of something that isn't precise, but these homes are super precise because they had to be.
Right. Modular homes. We were just looking at the modularity of the home, and this home facing true north.
Yeah.
You're so right about that. It was so detailed. So you not only know Roger Lee, you've spoken about other architects' work that you've worked on, and
yeah.
you also have another home in Sea Ranch.
Yeah, yeah.
And can you talk with us a little bit about that home and about William Turnbull and
yeah.
what that experience has been like?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well,
I sold one of his designs in San Francisco, and I remember it was just so unique, but you
yeah.
have the firsthand experience of living in one.
Yeah, well... So I grew up on a ranch in San Benito County, and I spent my childhood mostly on my horse, but in barns and hay lofts and around a lot of kind of rural, authentic rural buildings that were not designed by architects, but were built to enclose spaces and mm-hmm. were thoughtful about the wind and the shape. And, you know, Turnbull's, his father was an architect and his grandfather was an architect. And he spent a lot of time, I think, out in what was in New Jersey when he was young and around rural buildings. And he developed a love of the simplicity of those rural buildings. And then as he came to California, and blended those with modernism, which was in the early 60s something very new. And he had an incredible, just brilliant sense of composition. And I just really appreciate that about him and the way he would have, you know, just a blank wall and then one little window offset, right? And you
yes.
see that so much in Condominium One, and in a lot of the homes that he designed. And there's this wonderful tension between conceal and reveal. And in our home in Sea Ranch, he also had a great imagination.
Yes.
And so I remember, I'll never forget the first time I walked in the home, you know, you walk in this door and there's this two-story atrium with a catwalk above and then a view right out to the ocean, and you can look up into there and they're like little haylofts connected by a catwalk. And
so
I was like,
great.
Ah, wow. So, and then just the geometry of it and things like that
yes.
were just, it was very strong. So
a lot of geometry, right?
Yeah, inspired by that. But also there were problems with it. It needed a lot of work, and there were things about the configuration and the plan that needed to be reworked. So I think that's always a question with these homes is how do we respect what they are, but can also see what the new opportunities are for now and see, well, maybe what could also... What are opportunities in order to enhance them, but keep the original spirit of them?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that. Keeping the original spirit. I loved. For those of you listening, if you go to CokeArchitects.com or you look at their Facebook page or Instagram page, you will be flooded by beautiful visuals of exactly what Joanne is talking about. And these homes have that spiritual feel to me, which is why I'm talking to you right now. I said I have to have her on this podcast. So you've not only worked on Roger Lee's, you mentioned two other architects who were pretty amazing, John Hahn Oswald and Fred Langhorst. Can you share with us a little bit about those projects?
Yeah. And I think what was both consistent with both of those architects is, and with Roger Lee and many of the other, even the Eichlers and all of that, is Frank Lloyd Wright was such an incredible inspiration. Of course, De Neutra, Schindler, all of the iconic mid-century modern architects. Fred Langhorst worked with Wright at Taliesin for 6 years. He was one of his main apprentices. And he and his wife, Lois, who she was also an architect, she went to MIT. And they had a practice in the Contra Costa out in Lafayette, and did a number of beautiful homes out there. And one of the projects on our website, it's called Canyon. We did a complete renovation to that home. And what was great about it is our clients received all the original photos of was originally there. And I just also want to say I'm so grateful to the commitment of our clients to restore that vision and to all that it takes to do that. Yes. You know, you have to allocate the resources. There's time, there's money, there's a lot of things that have to come together to really pull all the pieces together to meet the needs of the home, but also to do it in a way that really honors what was there, and not only honors it, but also it becomes an exemplar for how to do it and inspires other people. So I'm grateful for getting to partner with always such great people in that way. And then John Hans Ostwald was another architect, mid-century architect, that he always included a spiral stair in all of his homes, many times landing on black exposed aggregate and cork. And again, I worked with some lovely clients to work on a home that he did perched up in the East Bay Hills with stunning views right out to the Golden Gate and all over. You feel like you're in an airplane kind of flying. And we did a lot of work on that house. Really, we touched every part and piece of it. But it had a very strong use of redwood and glass. And so we worked within and brought in, you know, materials like almost like a heath, but it's a little different. But, you know, just thinking through the materiality of the era and bringing that all together. And we're gonna photograph that house and get it on our website because it's beautiful.
Oh, I love it.
Deserves to be out in the world.
I cannot wait to see that. I also cannot wait to see Local Project and your piece with Local Project. Local Project is, so I went to school for film and media, and real estate just happened to be a fun one-off of that, just doing all of this work for modernism. But Local Project, I think, is the best architecture show that's out there right now, not only for the quality, but for their content. Can you share with us how that experience was? And of course, they would want to showcase your work. That's so exciting.
Oh, well, they're wonderful and very professional and innovative in the way that they are using video and social media to share just incredible, iconic pieces of our architecture all throughout. They were first, you know, in Australia, and they've really expanded. I just work with them during a project that's going to come out in the next couple months. Actually,
so
my place.
Great.
But I love their The Australians have a wonderful sense of humor. I think that's one of the best things besides all the videos and the incredible project. They're just lovely to work with and have a great sense of humor and keep it light.
Yes, right? They do.
And
they
have a great time
doing
it.
They have fun with it.
Yeah,
they really do.
So I love that, you know, you were talking about your background and the things that you've worked on and where you studied. I love that you have experience with warehouses also and with commercial spaces.
Yeah.
So that's something that is very unique and very rare. And I think that gives you an edge in another way too. Can you talk a little bit about that work and how it's been different for you, how it influenced you?
Yeah. Well, let's see. So I mostly did that before I started my practice. Yeah. So I was working in San Francisco when, but I guess the other way of thinking about it is the space that I'm in right now, my office, is a warehouse conversion.
Yes.
But I had worked on a lot of them actually in the early 90s in San Francisco when the buzzword of live work was a new thing. The space where my office is was actually the very first designated live-work space in the town of Berkeley. So it's kind of iconic in that way. It was an old mattress factory from the 20s. And, you know, of course we came in and kind of gutted the space, and we put in radiant heat and completely rebuilt the whole space to being a wonderful sort of home away from home, which is work for architects.
Right.
You spend a lot of time working, so you really want your space to be wonderful to be in. It's interesting in some ways because that experience is a lot like the sort of deciphering and sort of curatorial process of working with mid-century homes, right? You want to keep the original steel windows, right, from the 20s, and you want to keep the glass block, I really wanted to bring in some wood, and I really wanted to bring in this other elements, but it's always this kind of amount of how you do that, where you do that, how much you do that, so that you're not obliterating,
right?
The what's really true about it, but you're just weaving it into the ecosystem.
Right.
And I think that's where architects really can help, I think, people with how to really do this. How do you... What stays, what goes,
right?
And then how do we land with something that I always feel like really true buildings have self-knowledge. They just feel good.
Yes, they feel good.
They feel good. You walk in and go, yes. I love it. Well, that's because somebody's thought through.
Yeah, someone made the effort here so that you can enjoy it.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, the spaces really do, they influence your mood, they influence your life so much. And I love one thing you said when we were talking before. You said, it's our job to pass on this great architecture. You know, we're only here for a short time. That was so inspiring to me what you said. You said, we are only here for a short time. What can we do to enhance these spaces while we are here?
Yeah.
And when we hand it off to the next person, we rarely think about that. We think, oh, I'm going to live in this house forever.
Yeah.
This is mine, and I'm going to be the one and only and last owner. That is not the case. These homes have outlived all of us. So
I feel like if we think about geological time, it feels, you know, that's the relativity, right? But no, I think, I don't mean to say that, and I hope everybody is here as long as they can be here. That's for sure. But I think of it in terms of what I inherited, right? From the woman who hired Roger Lee to build my home. And she was a wonderful... Her name was Sally Hackley, and she left me all her notes. I have the time card of every person who worked on our home, and she left me this whole binder of stuff and all her notes with Roger Lee, her contract, the building permit that cost $57 in 1952. Wow. And I think that I'm so grateful to her, right? Yeah. So for what was given to me. And so I think there's just a thoughtfulness about, oh, I will be giving this to someone else, and what are in those boxes? You know, and what home does that person kind of receive, right? So I think about it just in the longevity of that. And I think it's just because I feel so, I feel like there was so much kindness or so much that she left so much. And I don't know, she probably wasn't an intention. She probably just stuffed it in a box and said, let's keep these and never throw them away.
Yeah, this goes with the house.
It's like, and I'm kind of like, oh, look at what this, you know. But because it is, it's so vintage, right? I mean, it's pre-digital. It feels so like, whoa, you know, and that you could build an incredible mid-century home. She didn't, it wasn't really called mid-century at the time, but a home with redwood and all. And she could hire an architect and it was $17,000. I mean, so it's just fun to see that history and be a part of it. And so I think there's an awareness about how am I a part of that?
I love that. Yeah. That responsibility and that privilege and that honor to take on that ownership and to take care of these homes. I really love that. Another thing that you are wonderful at is fixing what a lot of real estate agents are doing to these homes. We want to share that, you know, you definitely don't want to paint the ceilings of a home. You don't want to add in carpeting. There are a lot of people, unfortunately, this is why I started my real estate firm, was because I was seeing agents marking these homes as just lots. You know, build your dream home here.
Yeah.
Or changing them so much to appeal to the masses when they're really just kind of ruining it for the next owners who have to fix what they've done. And you mentioned you've fixed, you know, you've taken paint off, you've restored that.
Yeah.
I know it can be very difficult to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to have the right team of people. And I think, I think there is a desire to make things new, and I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but I think how you do it. And so I think what really happens in these homes is some of this mahogany paneling that was from the Philippines from the 1950s is hard to find, and it's hard to know how to finish it and put it with the existing. And maybe it's been damaged. And so there's a practical component about painting things. And I understand that because, like, one of the projects also that we've just finished had a lot of mahogany paneling. And it was a real steep climb to put in new paneling next to the 1950s paneling and get it to come together. I can't even tell you how many rounds, and the formula is super complex. It's like a wild brew of this and that and umber and, you know, that we had to do. So the bar is high to restore. So I think what maybe, you know, is out there is how do we leave things, and that's a question, and I think it's kind of a blurry lines there. But I think that's kind of where that gets into place, right? Is there something a little dingy, and where do you get the mahogany? How do you find the painter to? But I do want to say that I find, and I come in contact, and I've just started working with a new client now, who really wishes that they would have left the home just as it was so that she could work with painters and she could do that. So I think that's maybe in the process of helping sell these homes, which is such an important process, is that conversation, which you would, sometimes you, I think it's just, there's momentum to fix it before you put it on the market.
Right.
But I think that there's people out there who would really prefer to kind of take it all on. And and making space for that, like, just allowing that to be an option.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think the words that really bother me when I hear homeowners say, oh, you know, the agent said we would have more money if we made it, you know, looking more like a traditional house. Or even I had one woman say, the broker told us to pay $30,000 to have it bulldozed down.
Ooh, yeah.
So that a new owner will not have to deal with it.
Yeah.
A perfectly good piece of architecture.
Yeah.
So it's our job to really educate people and spread the word that these homes are so rare and so beautiful, so please protect them.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think about a lot in terms of preserving these incredible, iconic homes is the way in which we now are in an era where we need to think about resources in a different way. And I think there's a new understanding around, and there's new evidence of the way in which human impact is affecting the planet in a way that is irreversible, right? And so the question really is, when we find these incredible gems, how do we preserve them, knowing that there's no way to really recreate it like it was?
Right.
And, you know, it's an interesting thing, because we used to think of a home as shelter from nature, and architecture sheltered us from the elements, and it still does, right? But I think the thinking has to shift to, how do we shelter architecture from humans?
That's exactly right?
Preserve nature and
yes.
preserve these homes, kind of, how do we preserve nature rather than conquer it?
Yes.
And is there an architecture where it's rightly scaled and our presence to the nature is honoring all the other ecosystems that are so important for our survival as well?
Right, right. And so. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for so eloquently, you know, explaining that. We really do need to look at what we're doing to these homes too, and wasting a lot of materials. And I've had so many clients say, you know, some other realtor told us to rip everything out and put all new materials in. We had to put in cherry cabinets or something horrible like granite, and it cost us $60,000 that we didn't have. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm referring people to Joanne, who's basically bringing all of that back.
Yeah.
So it's a cost to the seller and it's a cost to the buyer. And I think we really have to, you know, respect and keep things that are perfectly good and perfectly beautiful.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much, Joanne, for this beautiful, beautiful podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
For people listening, please go to cokearchitects.com, and we will have more images for you to share later when we get them from Joanne. Thank you again.
Thank you, Monique. Lovely. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you had as much fun learning about the world of mid-century modernism as I did. You can also catch the show on my YouTube channel, where we walk through some of the most stylish mid-century modern homes in California. Just search for Mid-Century Modernism with Monique and hit subscribe. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave me a comment to let me know what you think. Your feedback helps me make the show even better. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mid-Century Modernism with Monique.